came to say to us. Then we'll go back and address the two petitions, and then we will do the, take a look at the resolution with regard to bounty program that the department wants us to look at. So, Commissioner Olson's back in charge of open forum.
Cody, I've got you down first in the batter's box. Did you want another bite at the apple, or are you going to stand with your previous statement? Okay, thank you. Next, I have John Simpson from Pierce, South Dakota, also going to comment on the non-river East River special deer license. He left?
He was here.
Well, we'll come back to him if he steps back in. Next on that, Bill Paulton from Edgemont. You still with us? Welcome up. I'll just remind you as well, sir, 3 minutes for your comments. I'll try to give you the 1 minute warning when we get to that point, but if you keep your comments to 3 minutes, that'd be great. Just go ahead and reintroduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Okay, I'm Bill Paulton from, my address is Edgemont. I'm right on the west edge of Custer County, so I'm a long ways from Edgemont. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. And I wanted to talk about our elk problem. We're just overwhelmed by numbers of elk. And we've seen an increase, maybe due to different reasons. Part of it is our conservation practices, as we put in more water lines. And by the way, the Game Fish and Parks has participated in one of our water line projects, and we appreciate that. That was a win-win. We've done a lot of cover crops, working on soil health and so forth. And so we've been doing these things that has been drawing them in. And now we're looking at a population on the ranch at times of around 1,000 head of elk. And they'll come in and they'll hit our fields in the spring when they're starting to green up, and they'll be around throughout the whole growing season into the fall on our fields. And that's a tremendous loss of forage production. And we're blessed in many ways, blessed of where we live and the wildlife. We enjoy the wildlife. But we're also blessed because our kids want to stay on the ranch. And so we've got two young families that are trying to make a living on the ranch, and I feel this is really a threat. And it boils down to finances. We have a tolerance for a certain number of elk. We enjoy them at a reasonable level, but the financial loss is getting too much to bear. We've figured our financial losses just from loss of forage is well over $100,000 a year. And if we could run another 150 cows or something like that, what a difference that would make to our bottom line. As far as solutions are concerned, an obvious one is reducing the numbers. But beyond that, the financial aspects of this is, it all boils down to finance, is what it boils down to. If we're getting a return from the elk in some manner, whether it be a cash payment, whether it be hay replacing forage losses, or transferable licenses has been another idea. Comment on transferable licenses. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm running out of time. I could have a lot more to say. I do want to conclude here that we've been very happy with the Game Fish and Parks personnel, and from the Secretary Hepler right on down to our game wardens, and everybody's been responsive. They've been using the tools they have. They need some more tools in the toolbox, and thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Any questions?
Is Susan
She's my wife.
Is she speaking separately to this issue? You're signed in. I mean, you certainly have the opportunity. You can.
Okay.
Does anybody have any questions? You mentioned other solutions other than transferable tags. What else do you have in your back of your mind that would help with your situation?
We had a great meeting last week in Rapid City concerning the problem, and Secretary Hepler ran the meeting, and he said, and then there was others, and they talked about hay as being a possible solution to replace forage. That, to me, hay is about like money. So cash of some sort. Transferable licenses, I know it's been a touchy subject with hunting groups. They don't want to see commercialization. What they don't really admit, though, is that it's already commercialized, and the fact that the sporting goods stores make money, the vehicle dealers make money, the gas stations, the motels, the restaurants where they eat, everybody's making some money from it, except the landowner that has all the cost. And the other thing that I think they miss is that if we had a financial stake where we were getting some financial return from the elk, our tolerance for numbers of elk goes up because it is financial. And so if we had a few transferable licenses that would allow us to make some money from the elk, our tolerance would be higher for more elk. Therefore, it would be creating overall a net gain of hunting opportunities. And so the people that are worried about losing hunting opportunities, I don't think they'd be losing them.
I think Commissioner Locken, did you have a question?
I think you asked it, so go ahead. I'm good. I guess I could ask a question.
Commissioner Locken here. How many elk do you expect are killed on your property? How many hunters do you have?
I don't have an answer for that, but as many as possible. We have really gone out of our way. I've even stopped hunters along the road that you can tell they're hunters, and I've just stopped them and I'd say, are you hunting for elk? I'll send you where there's elk. And so we've got our place in the walk-in program. We invite hunters. We help them every way we can. And it's in some difficult country to hunt. If they're down in our fields during daylight hours, it's easy, but a lot of times they come down at after dark and leave before daylight. But good hunters can certainly get them. Then they go up into some pretty rough country, and they're harder to get, but then they'll be back the next night. Mm-hmm. It varies. There's other areas where it's maybe a little easier during the daytime, but I don't have an answer for, I don't know how many have actually been successful, but it's been pretty high. People that come and talk to us or that we talk to them and try to help them, most of them have filled.
Yeah. Well, I personally wish I could help you out, but I have a feeling Secretary Hepler is going to make sure I don't draw a license for the next 4 years, so 5 years from now I'll be in contact with
you. All right, we'll welcome you.
Thank you for your
time. Thank you.
Representative Goodwin, talk about lion season.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Hepler, I'm Tim Goodwin, and I'm here not as a representative, but as an avid lion hunter. And I just wanted to thank you for extending the lion season this year to 30 April. I think that'll help a lot because the month of April, it's a longer daylight time, it's warmer out. And it seems like the last few years we get some tremendous good tracking snows when April comes around. And it's a lot easier if you have snow on the ground to see what, even if you don't track them, if you're trying to call them in, you can see what's happening because they're pretty stealthy and they're pretty nocturnal, but they can't hide their tracks. So it makes a big difference. So I appreciate you doing that. This year, right now, we've got 10 females down and 6 males. My youngest son had to go to a military school for the National Guard, and he had to leave on January 6th to April 30th, so we were lucky to go out. He got his already, so that was pretty exciting. Since this lion season started in 2005, it's went beyond, I think, anybody's imagination how popular it is. And so my two boys and a couple other avid lion hunters started a Cougar Classic, where they have an actual cougar night, like a Ducks Unlimited banquet or a Pheasants Forever banquet. And I just wanted to say this year, it's February 16th. If you've never had lion meat before, everybody brings their lion meat. All the lion hunters are there. A lot of people are frustrated. They went out and never seen a lion. These guys will share their stories, their successes, show them the calls, tell them everything. And so it's been a real success. And so it's at High Sega, the old steakhouse up at High Sega. Now it's a Mexican restaurant. And it starts at 4 o'clock on February 16th. And everybody's welcome. You don't have to have a lion tag, or you don't have to have been a lion hunter. If you just want to come and check it out, it's a pretty good time. And there's something about somebody that gets on a lion and walks him down until he kills him or tries to call one in, you know. It's probably not the safest thing you ever did. You go out at night and you put your call down in a ravine and you sit up there and in the afternoon and you call until after dark, because you can go 30 minutes past sunset. And then after it's pure dark, because the sun goes down behind the hills, you know, out in the Black Hills, you don't have a horizon, it's pitch black. And so now you get to walk down there and pick up your call and walk out again. And that's probably not the safest thing you ever did. So, and if it's easy, if you think you could have multiple people, the more movement, the more noise, you're way better being by yourself. And if you track one down too, they know you're back there, but it just doesn't work with two people. You have one person getting on the track is the way you can get to them. At least that's our experience. And also, I appreciate you keeping the same quota system of 60 lions, 40 females, 60 total. Like I said, we're 1/4 there with the females, so I think we'll hit the quota. I think before April 30th, the season will be shut down, and that's conservation. That's what we want to do. So just thank you for the season. Appreciate everything you do, and thank you.
Thank you. Linda Hilding, Prairie Hills Audubon Society.
I'm Nancy Hilding, Prairie Hills Audubon Society. I have a lot to say. I'll try to be real quick. I gave you guys all one of these, okay? And I emailed you a way to link to this. It's an interactive website to see what's happening to birds with climate change. Okay, you have 39 highly vulnerable species in South Dakota that are going to be extirpated someplace between 1.5 to 3 degrees centigrade. Okay, one of those is the lesser scalp, which is a duck. 1.5 degrees centigrade, it's thrown out of South Dakota. You can look at this. Why am I bringing this up? When I actually came here to talk about nest predator bounty, I'm going to ask for the, I don't know how many times, that Game Fish and Parks Commission starts allowing us to attend hearings and speak and do public forum remotely by video conferencing or teleconferencing at all commission meetings. I just drove from Rapid City to give these 3 minutes of testimony. This is a waste of gas. It's contributing to carbon, whatever, and it's about climate change. You want to protect ducks. You want to protect the lesser spouse, a lesser scalp. Let us attend these remotely by video conferencing, especially the one in March, which is going to be highly controversial. Okay, so I'm asking for video conferencing at least to two places, such as Outdoor Campus West and Outdoor Campus East for March and from here on out, okay? I also am asking, I remember 2005 when we rented a Greyhound bus to bring people in to testify on the first mountain lion season, and everybody was limited to 2 minutes because there were so many people in the room. I hope you don't do that in March, and I suggest you think about starting earlier, like at 12 o'clock. Because there's a lot, my estimate was 976 comments on the nest predator last time. I would estimate 90% of those was against. You know, I'm expecting you're going to have a lot of people there in March 5th. Okay, moving on. I'm going to nest predator bounty now. We are opposed to killing predators to maximize the ability of human predators to take more prey animals. Okay, when Keith Fisk was talking about the potential mitigations, different things, I suggest you also look at designing different areas of where this is allowed to happen. In particular, you have the predators that you're targeting also eat rodents. They don't just eat ducks and pheasants. So they serve a useful function, bringing down the population of other rodents, taking out the sick ones. Okay, in South Dakota, we have rodents carrying the fleas and the ticks for plague and for Lyme disease. I suggest you take out of your, if you're doing this, we don't want you to do it, but if you do it, subtract those areas from the where this is happening.
I need you to wrap it up.
Okay, so we're also concerned about endangered species to take away the areas. We are going to, how many time do I have?
You're 33 seconds over.
Okay, I want you to look at South Dakota 41-8-31 that tells you how you can kill animals in South Dakota, which is rifles, arrows, and air guns. Keith Fisk is teaching how to euthanize animals. You have an opossum with 13 little baby opossums in her stomachs. They're like kangaroos. How are you going to euthanize 13 little baby opossums with a rifle? And okay, I've got more to say, but there's enough time. Thank you.
Thanks. And I apologize, Nancy. I've known you for years. I don't know why I read Linda out of Nancy, but thanks for your time and for coming.
No, that's okay. I would tell you more, but we have until March.
Yeah, thank you.
I suggest you start that hearing earlier. If you're going to give everybody 3 minutes.
Representative Pischke, you're up next, sir. Talking about duck limit survey and the Lake Andy stocking program.
Yes, you can just call me Tom Pischke. I'm just here representing myself at this point in time. Since I was here and the commission meeting was meeting, I thought I'd say a few comments on that. One thing that my dad, who lives down in Douglas County, has asked me to comment is that he wishes that there was some stocking going on in the Lake Andes lakes. I've mentioned that to a couple members of the GFMP here in the hallways of the Capitol lately, but I just wanted to make that on your radar. In the 25 years that he's lived in that area, the lake is now the highest he's ever seen it. I can remember in the early 2000s when perch were really biting in that lake and the water was good, and then we had a little bit of a drought, but that's something that he wanted me to bring up. On the duck limit survey, I recently got an email from the GFMP talking about possibly going to a different type of system for limits. I don't know why that would even be necessary, but I want to express my concern as to, I think the current system we have is working great. I like the ability to shoot 5 or 6 ducks when I go out and hunt, and it talked about some people not being able to identify species of ducks. If people can't identify what they're shooting at, they either need to get some contacts, get their eyes checked, or just learn the species better. Because quite honestly, that's just a slap in the face to duck hunters. So that's all I got to say. I guess keep doing what you're doing. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks so much. Senator Smith, you're signed up next. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. VJs and the rest of the commission, plus Secretary Cap Hepler. I'm from Brookings. I'm the state senator. I have introduced a bill into the South Dakota legislature this year. It's Senate Bill number 179, and it's going to be a requirement for a wildlife habitat stamp, which residents would pay $10 for and non-residents would pay $25 for. The reason why is because I've been around the sun 64 times, and over those years, I've seen a lot of changes. We all have. Mr. Jensen, you're just a little bit older than me, so a little bit. And I've watched the soil bank days come to an end. I watched the slim pickings of the 70s and then the advent of the CRP. But we're getting into a situation in terms of access for the blue-collar guy or woman where it's becoming more difficult to get onto land. And farmers have, or ranchers have friends, they have family, they have paid operations, and I understand that. But we're excluding a population, and that a lot of those people are simply putting their guns away. And this particular legislation has both a terrestrial element to it and a aquatics element too, on it too. It's time to rejuvenate the 720 game production areas in the state. It's time to offer more money on the walk-in programs. It's time to fully enroll the James River watershed program. It's an exciting thing. The legislators are all aware of this particular legislation. Have had a tremendous response so far. I'm happy for it. We all understand the need for improved habitat, and this is a way for everybody to participate. And I'll leave you with this. You know, I grew up in Eureka, and seeing the town die, like a lot of small towns, they just simply are fading away. And I left this there, 1973, there are 1,500 people in that town. They're probably going to be about 750 in the next census, thereabouts. But I talked to the guy who runs the grocery store there, and you know, he's told me for the last several years, the first 3 weeks of pheasant season makes his year. It's Christmas for him. And we have to continue to make these small towns, small places attractive, and where people want to go to. And this is a way we can invest in our future. We have to think about it. You know, 100 years after Teddy Roosevelt's death, you know, we're still benefiting from his vision. And the vision is to make sure that those who follow us have access to the same things that we have seen, and there's so many benefits for improved habitat, which people participate in. I thank you very much.
Thanks for your time. Anyone have any questions? I would have one if you could you remind us, I don't remember hearing you say it, what do you project the revenue for this to be in?
According to the information provided by the Game Fish and Parks on the terrestrial side, you're looking at a little bit over $3 million, and for the aquatic side, they estimate around $2.7 million. So it's roughly $6 million.
Commissioner Larkin.
Thank you, Senator Smith. As a business owner in some small towns, I'd like to point out that the hunting opportunities is a good way to attract employees to smaller towns, because any of these smaller towns also have a hard time drawing employees to their town, and if they know they got hunting opportunities, it's a lot easier to bring the employees into town.
I appreciate what you said.
Any other questions? Mr. Chairman, that concludes the open forum and public comment, unless Senator...
Just 30 seconds. This idea came from a longtime wildlife biologist in Brookings who told me, and a longtime South Dakota citizen, that he goes to western Minnesota to hunt all the time, hunt pheasants. And it just bugs me that someone leaves the pheasant capital of the world and goes to Minnesota. Nothing against Minnesota, except their Vikings and their twins just don't get to the end. But but we need to keep people here.
I agree.
We do. So thank you very much.
All right, so we will go back to